What made surrendering doubly painful for General King was that he had no official consent to do so. In making what he called his ignominious decision, King had secured approval from no one in the high command, and in fact his superiors were adamantly opposed, or would have been opposed had he consulted them. MacArthur had expressly stated that Bataan was not to fold. From the safe remove of his offices in Melbourne, MacArthur had cabled Army Chief of Staff George C. Marshall that he was utterly opposed, under any circumstances or conditions, to the ultimate capitulation of this command. If it is to be destroyed, it should be upon the actual field of battle, taking full toll from the enemy. Skinny Wainwright was equally unyielding in his stated position on the matter. To President Roosevelt, Wainwright had pledged to keep our flag flying in the Philippines as long as an American soldier or an ounce of food and a round of ammunition remains. The moment Wainwright heard about King's decision to surrender that morning, he tried to contact him and countermand the move, but King proved unreachable by either telephone or radio. General King's unilateral decision to surrender on his men's behalf was thus courageous in several ways at once. He could only assume that he would be court-martialed after the war for acting contrary to orders. Yet he insisted on acting alone, so that no one above him, neither Wainwright nor MacArthur nor Marshall, would be saddled with any part of the responsibility. It was a soberly thought-out move, very much in keeping with the sacrificial nature of so much of the Bataan campaign. Since King could speak only for the forces on Bataan, Corregidor would still hold, at least for the time being, and Wainwright could decide for himself whether to surrender the citadel or languish until the last ounces of food and the last rounds of ammunition were expended. The 10,000 men on Corregidor had the supplies and morale to continue the fight. The Rock, as it was called, had been the target of a relentless aerial siege so massive that every tree and plant had been obliterated, leaving the surface of the island denuded and riddled with craters. But within the vast network of tunnels and catacombs below, the Corregidor forces enjoyed access to considerably more food, ammunition, and medicines than King's men did. Wainwright could hold out for perhaps a month. General King had another difficult problem to ponder as he motored north to meet the Japanese. He knew that a large percentage of his men were in such poor shape that they would be unable to walk to wherever the Japanese intended for them to go. As King put it in a memo, the physical condition of the command due to long siege, during which they had been on short rations, will make it very difficult to move them a great distance on foot. Foreseeing this eventuality, King had reserved a significant number of American troop-carrying vehicles and ample stores of gasoline, expressly for the purpose of trucking the prisoners north, to wherever the Japanese might designate. He recognized that it was highly unusual for a defeated general to request that the victors allow him to transport his own army into captivity, but he dearly hoped that General Homa would accept his proposal, for he feared that the Japanese did not possess sufficient numbers of vehicles to accomplish such a large task, and if they did, that they would find more pressing military uses for them. In spite of the white flags flying conspicuously from the two jeeps in King's entourage, his forward progress was almost immediately halted by several attacking Japanese planes. The aircraft dove low and proceeded to bomb and strafe the road, aiming straight for King's jeeps. Earlier in the morning, King had sent envoys ahead to alert the Japanese that he would be proceeding north to discuss terms for a surrender, and the Japanese had promised safe passage. But somehow the word had failed to spread to the pilots. Every few hundred yards, King and his entourage would have to leap from the vehicles and crouch in the roadside ditch to avoid being hit. The planes kept circling back to drop more bombs and pepper the road with machine gun fire.